Call me sentimental, but to me, the most joyful moment in sports is the soccer goal. And when that goal happens at the World Cup, well, it's pretty good. I'm Brian Phillips. With the 2022 Men's World Cup approaching, I'm making a podcast called 22 Goals on the Ringer Podcast Network. It's about 22 of the most fire emoji goals in the history of the tournament. We're going to have so much fun.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
Hello, media consumers. Welcome to Press Box. Brian Curtis of The Ringer here, along with producer Erica Cervantes. We are in the little pocket between the summertime and football season. So I want to do something fun today and bring on my Ringer colleague and my friend, John Jastrzemski, a.k.a. JJ. Now, JJ's Cliff Notes bio goes like this. He was a radio host at New York City's WFAN, a big guy, an up-and-coming guy, who came to The Ringer last year to host podcasts like New York, New York, and The Ringer Gambling Show. But trust me, that does not do JJ justice. Because this summer, I had the chance to go to Peter Luger's steakhouse in Brooklyn with him. And let me tell you something. This was like the Copacabana scene in Goodfellas, except we went through the front door. The door opens up. The guy at the stand is happy to see us. We get a great table. We have a fantastic experience. And, you know, there are ways to measure success in New York radio, but getting that kind of reception at Peter Luger, it's got to be top five. JJ and I talked about a number of things, including how he got his first job in radio through a talent search, much like recent guest Rebecca Lowe. We talked about him covering this week's Subway Series, and he offered a power ranking of the teams New Yorkers most want to talk about on the radio. Here's John Jastrzemski. All right, JJ, you grew up on Staten Island. When did you first get the idea of working in sports radio?
So I think for many kids growing up in the boroughs or on the outskirts of the boroughs, you know, you want to be Yankee. Like, I want it to be center field. I want it to be Bernie Williams or Paul O'Neill or Derek Jeter. But you come to a realization probably when you're like, maybe it's 11, 12, 13 years old. Like, holy smokes, I am not anywhere close to being a professional athlete. So you kind of like pivot from, hey, I love sports. I love this. I love that, to, well, how can I have a life in which I do something that's kind of close to that? So I found sports radio. I found Mike and the Mad Dog. I found WFAN. And Brian, in many ways, the rest, as they say in the business, is history.
What was it about sports radio in particular that appealed to you?
For me, it was the connection that you had with the fan. The idea that you could debate, well, who's the better shortstop, Jeter or Garcia Parra, or is it, you know, Clemens and Piazza, going back to that whole brouhaha in 2000? Like, that sort of back and forth, give and take, I always found appealing. Like, I went to Syracuse. I never really had any interest in doing play-by-play. And look, I have a very different sounding kind of voice. You know, I'm not going to have the beautiful pipes of Joe Buck or of Al. Although Al's got a little bit of a New York twang and a little New York accent, which I love, and I'm glad that he hasn't dropped it. But you know, like a Brian Anderson, or like these guys who have these unbelievable, like, perfect accents that come out of central casting, I don't have that. I never had any desire to change my voice. I love, Brian, that people who are outside of New York, they actually think that I am putting on a voice, like that this is out of character. I'm like, no, you haven't spent any time around me. Like, this is what you hear, what you see is what you get. So for me, that platform of being able to be opinionated, have something to say, react, and kind of do your thing, I was like, this is a dream come true.
So pause on your voice for a second. How would you describe your voice?
Very New York, loud, in your face, twang, man. That's it. We like our coffee, we eat hot dogs, you know the deal, man. Like, we don't sugarcoat it around here. And like, there are folks, like, I feel like the folks who live in Manhattan, they don't have much of an accent. But if you live in Brooklyn, you live in Staten Island, you live in Queens, like, you kind of develop that twang. And I always used to get a kick out of when I was at college. So you go to Syracuse, great school, you know, great melting pot of folks coming from like all over the country. So I'm sure there were a lot of guys and gals who had never heard a voice like mine before. So, like, you know, you'd notice it maybe in the elevator or just walking around campus. I always used to get really annoyed. And like, I'd be playful about it, but I'd be like, what the hell is that? When someone would say to me, are you from Boston? I'd look at them, I'd be like, dude, come on, man. No. So there you go.
Graduated from Syracuse 2010. And how do you get to the mighty WFAN from there?
So that's a great pathway for, I think, a lot of young broadcasters out there, because they ask me this question all the time. They're like, you know, you went to Syracuse, you worked at the two radio stations there, you put your time in, you did a lot of shows, you made your mark. Not to say I thought I was hot shit, Brian, because that's not it at all. But I was fairly confident that, like, out of Syracuse, being good at what I do, I was going to get a job. I didn't think I'd start at WFAN, but I was like, oh, I'm going to get a job right out of college. Well, I graduate in May of 2010. It's June, no job. It's July, no job. It's August, September, no job. I'm sending stuff out. You'd maybe get a response back from 1 out of 10 or 2 out of 10 of the tapes and the emails and the stuff that you would put together and you would send. Like, I was a finalist for a job in Boise, Idaho. I mean, I can't imagine me living or working in Boise, Idaho, but, you know, didn't get that one. There was a job up in Buffalo, New York. Andy Roth, who I think is a terrific program director, he's in Cleveland now. He got back to me. He was very, like, passionate. He loved my stuff. He said, you're a really good talent, but this is an update job. And quite frankly, you're just too New York. I got to go in a different direction. So I'm wondering, I'm like, damn, it's October. What am I going to do? How am I going to get a job? So for like 2 or 3 months, I was folding shirts. I was doing announcements at the NBA store. You want to talk about bringing you down, man? Going from college, peak, 6 overtime, Syracuse, NCAA tournament games, happy hour, 350 pitchers at Chuck's. Like, you go from that to getting up at like 7:30 in the morning to work in the NBA store. I'm like going into work for a month. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? This is a disaster. Thankfully, you know, 2-3 months go by. Then I started doing some part-time freelance work, did a little Asbury Park Press, did a little patch, like just writing. And I had no idea what I was doing, but it was in sports. It was high school. I could hang out down the Jersey Shore and hang with the friends for some extracurricular activities after the fact. So that was kind of cool. So why do I bring all of this up? Okay, so WFAN has this like dream job contest where it's like called Fantasy Phenom. They give someone, whoever wins, a 1-year contract for a 2-hour show at 1 to 3 in the morning, which in radio terms is like a wasteland. Nobody's listening. Good promotion, whatever. But I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to go out for it. They go have like 5 auditions at shopping malls. You do like a 2-minute rant. I did that. They cut it down to 50. Then it's 5 groups of 10, bars all over the city. Did that, little Q&A, and I made it to the finals. So at the very least, Brian, I'm like, okay, I'm in the finals. It's at Bar A, big place down the Jersey Shore. It's on the radio station. Mike is hosting it. It's on, yes. I said at the very least, I have a demo tape, and I have a two-hour show Christmas week guaranteed. Little did I know, I'd go down there, knock it out of the park, and win the damn thing. Pretty crazy.
Now, what was your original two-minute rant that gets you to the semifinal?
I roasted A.J. Burnett, who was a hero for the Yankees in the 2009 World Series, but completely fell apart for them in the playoffs, was awful in the 2011 year, had issues with Posada. It was just very frustrating. So I just remember killing him. And I do remember, I don't know why this dawns on me now, $1 million arm, 5 cent head, and I kind of like closed my rent with that. And people tell me that to this day. Like, I didn't even remember it. Somebody actually mentioned it to me a few weeks ago. And I was like, wow, that was a pretty memorable line. That's good. I was like, I wish I actually put planning into that and really like thought it through or whatnot. It just, you know, kind of came to me. That's how I roll. That's what I do. But yeah, that was the big claim to fame down at Borre.
Now, with Francesa, were you nervous going on? This is the guy who you grew up listening to, your radio idol. Are you shaking when you go on with him?
To be honest, not really. No, I was, if anything, Brian, I was more nervous looking out at the crowd of Jersey Shore folk who maybe were having a few libations over the course of a five and a half hour day, very steamy at Bar A. And when you get up to the stage, you know, Mike is the best. He's very, you know, Don Corleone, very mafioso. He goes, "Hey, kid, how you doing?" You know, like gave me the shake, you know, the big smile, the whole deal. But I look out at this crowd and I didn't even, you know, you don't even grasp how many people are listening or how many people are watching. But when you see out in the crowd, it's like, holy shit, there are a whole lot of people watching me right now and I better not suck.
Now, sports radio is very tough industry. You got a lot of people who are producers and board ops and everything else who are waiting for their shot at getting on the air. How did people at the station react to you coming in the way you did?
You know, I was very mindful of that. And I can say to this day, some of my best friends are guys who were off air, who are now making their mark, some on television, others in gambling spaces, others still who are at the radio station. And they're, you know, we have a group chat. We talk basically every day. They're some of my best friends. But I was very mindful of that dynamic. I really was, because I get it. Like, I would have been A-OK starting my career, producing shows, putting the grind in. Like, I was had the Syracuse degree. I was ready to do it. I was given this lifeline. But, you know, for me, and those guys would be able to speak to it better than I can, my thought was, let's go in there and let's show them I belong. And I think if you go in, even if you got your start via a contest, you start your show, you hit the ground running, you got a feel, you got a pulse, you got a presence about you, your work speaks for itself. So listen, that contest was a life-changing opportunity for me. Like, I have thought about it a lot, Brian. Like, what would my life be like if I didn't win the contest? And maybe I get in the radio. Maybe I'm a college professor somewhere. Maybe I'm a lawyer. Maybe I'm coaching. I don't know. But I knew once I got the shot, I was going to be, not to sound conceited, but I was like, I get the shot, I'm going to make the most of this shot.
That's what I like about sports radio. Most people on it are completely self-created. At some point, they were given a chance to be in front of a microphone and either they were good or they sucked.
That's it. And you know, it's funny you mention that, because I would love to, like, there are so many young broadcasters that reach out for advice and I love helping them out. And I'll give them little pointers here, little pointers there. You know, you can critique some stuff to some degree, but I kind of equate it to the SATs, man. Like, you can try to study for the SATs, but like, you're either going to do well or you're not. Like, there's an element of that. Like, if you're a good broadcaster, some of it is, you can't teach it. You know, like, you could go to every broadcasting seminar. You could try to listen to any of the best that do it. But you have to have, like, a presence about you. in New York. You can't fake it. You got to have a knowledge about you. You got to be opinionated. You got to be interesting. Like, and if you're not, well, then you're not going to have a gig for a long period of time. That's for sure.
All right. You're hosting 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. That's your shift. What do you do from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. on The Fan?
So it started out how I'm doing that shift once a week. And I worked for the legendary Mark Chernoff. And at the time, Eric Spitz, who now is over at SiriusXM, he was very instrumental in like my early days at the radio station. So like my first show, I thought was horrible, like horrible. Cause I was like so amped up. I had to think about it for like a month. Then you get on the mic and you're like, and I did some solo radio at Syracuse, but like 2 hours fly when you mix in updates and commercials. So I like felt like I had so much more to say and I didn't get to it because it was such a short amount of time. And when they sent me feedback and it was positive, I'm like, did they listen to the same show I just listened to? Because I hated it. And maybe they had low expectations. I don't know. But I noticed over that year, they kept giving me more and more work. Like they would say, hey, we got a couple of days. Can you do these days? Thanksgiving holiday. Can you do these days? Christmas. And I, Brian, at that point in my career, I said yes to everything. It did not matter what was going on in my life. If I, when you're working 1 or 2 days a week and you're given another lifeline to be on the air, you take it. And I get annoyed, I'll be honest, when I see some of these younger broadcasters who come up who have a sense of entitlement about them. And I tell this to kids all the time. I go, listen, you want to get in this business, know you're working Thanksgiving, know you're working Christmas, know you're going to have to pay your dues and work some weekends until you don't have to do those things anymore. And if that's a problem for you, then go get a 9-to-5 desk job and do what you want to do and enjoy happy hour and enjoy Christmas and do whatever you want to do. But I get annoyed when I see some young broadcasters trying to cut corners when it comes to that sort of stuff. But for me, take every shift, kept getting more shifts. And by the end of that first year, they didn't have like a set place for me in a 5-day a week lineup where, listen, at the time, Boomer and Craig were doing fantastic ratings. Mike by himself, solo, was the king of radio. Joe and Evan, who were two personal friends of mine, did a fabulous midday show. And I'm like, all right, I'm young. I'm 23. I'm lucky enough I can live at home with my parents. Let's grind in New York, man. It's better than going to Albuquerque. You know what I mean? Like, I'm gonna be far more successful being in my home city, knowing the teams, having a feel and whatnot. I would have left if the right opportunity came my way, but that was basically my pathway to start, you know, grinding for quite a while at that radio station.
What kinds of people call the station in the middle of the night?
Oh, it's all over the map. Now, you'll get some wackadoos. You'll get some folks who are waking up to go to their jobs at 3 or 4 in the morning. You know, you have a lot of firefighters, a lot of cops, a lot of guys and gals who are up super late at night. So, you know, you really become their comfort food in many ways. Cause like you're sitting in the car for 6 or 7 hours. I can't hear Harry Styles as it was, you know, over and over again. So you really develop that sort of family-like atmosphere with the overnight callers. But for me, you know, I never looked at doing the overnight as, hey, I'm on in the overnight. I'm going to let these guys go forever. No, I kind of, if you were a good caller, I gave you time. If you sucked, I'd rather talk to myself than talk to a caller who's terrible, you know?
And were they asking about like Yankee game that night, Met game that night kind of stuff, or did the calls go in different directions?
For the most part, we would keep it on topic. I can't say that we always kept it on topic. There were plenty of times you'd have somebody come off the beaten path. Maybe it's somebody who had one too many cocktails or somebody who just wanted to hear their own voice. And, you know, sometimes with the older caller, I felt like early on in my career, I would always want to prove to these folks, hey, you're talking to somebody who's 23, 24, but I know the history of the teams. So sometimes spare me the history lesson of the teams. I know what went on. Like, you're not going to lecture me on Mike Torres and Bucky Dent and, you know, whatever the case may be, because I've known this stuff. I've learned this stuff. It's part of my DNA and fabric, for better or worse.
Were you a host that liked arguing with callers?
Depended on my mood. You know, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. You know, I wouldn't force it, but when somebody would be a jerk, we'd put them in their place. I had no problem doing that. I'm loud in general. I'm not going to let a caller go up. I would always make sure the caller stayed on track. That was always something for me. And I do it now when we do our Spotify live shows. Somebody's getting off the beaten path. I cut them off and I get out of there because there's just not enough time. I think about the bigger quotient of the audience and not that one individual. You can't think of it that way. Like, I think that's a mistake sometimes folks make when they first start, Brian, is they're too focused on the one individual caller they're talking about. The caller is a part of the show. The audience, though, is far more wide-ranging. And in many cases, most of your audience is not calling in.
What was your life like when you're working overnights?
It was a grind, man. It was a grind. I think back to when I worked the overnights part-time, where I would do a couple of days a week. So I kind of graduated to that point at FAN where I was doing the 1 to 3. Then they gave me a Saturday full overnight, but I was like filling in so much that I would do like 3 or 4 overnights a week. So it'd be like overnight, Sunday into Monday, but then you'd be off Monday and then you'd be like maybe on at 10 o'clock on Tuesday night. So, you know, I'd be with my girlfriend. It'd be like 11 o'clock at night. She's like, hey, we're going to sleep. I'm like, no. I was like, I was up at 1:30 in the afternoon. I am wired right now. I am not going to sleep. I couldn't fall asleep at 11 o'clock if you paid me. And I was also a lunatic too at the time because during a baseball season, Brian, I played in a men's league. So I used to do a radio show from 1 to 6 or 2 to 6. I might get like 3 hours of sleep, roll out of bed, go play baseball, play a baseball game, watch the Yankees and the Mets, then go take a nap, then go back and do an overnight. So it definitely took a few years off of my life. But it's a grind. Like doing the show, you don't really think about how tired you are, but like the collateral damage of day in and day out of, you know, getting your body kind of ready for that, it's not easy, man.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
How many baseball games did you feel obligated to watch?
I mean, I'm a nut job. I watch every night. I mean, unless 162? I have... Oh, I watch... Like, right now, as we are doing this podcast, I'm watching the Met game. It is literally right... You know, I'm multitasking right now watching the Met game. But I... You know, like, listen, if you have something going on and you're not... Like, if I'm on a particular night, I am going to make sure that I am well-versed in what goes on with the game. And look... That's me. Like, to be honest, Brian, I would feel naked if I went on the air and I can't fake it. You know what I mean? Like, I that's not me. Somebody would catch me immediately. And listen, there are shows where plenty of hosts don't watch the games. There's no other way around it. They don't watch. They find a way to be successful. More power to them. I couldn't do a show that way. Like, I think in the morning, it's different. If you're a morning show, you're getting off the beaten path, you're doing a lot of crazy stuff. Like, I don't think a morning show, it's as big of a must. Now, big games, yes, but like the July Yankees A's game for a morning show, I don't think is make or break. Where I think if you're on in the afternoon, I think you're playing to that sort of audience. That's my personal take.
Put the New York teams in order for me. That people want to talk about. Who's the biggest, who's the second, who's third?
It's a baseball town. Because the Yankees from 93 on, they haven't had a losing season. So to have the Yankees and their brand day in and day out, they gravitate, they generate. The Mets are gigantic. The two biggest teams in town right now are the Yankees and the Mets. And that's why I think we're poised around here, hopefully, fingers crossed, to have a monster October, which is going to be great for New York, New York. It's going to be great for all the stuff I'm doing at SNY. Just there's a great buzz still in New York City for the baseball. Now, I'll say this. If the Knicks ever got good, I mean good, they'd be the number one team in town. But because...
Really?
I do believe that. Because I'll tell you why, Brian. Everybody can unite around the Knicks. I know the Nets are there. Nobody cares about the Nets. All you need to know about the dynamic in town is Kevin Durant came back, and I'm sure all over the Ringer side, it was number one story. Bill probably did an emergency pod. We did a pod the other night, a live show. We did 35 minutes, 40 minutes of Subway Series, and it was a little disclaimer for Kevin Durant after the fact. And that's the audience. That's New York City. The Subway Series was a far bigger story than Kevin Durant on the second basketball team in town coming back after wasting everybody's time for 4 to 6 weeks. So, and understanding that dynamic of working in a city that you're in, I think it's so crucial. And sometimes guys and gals can go to a different market, learn the teams, really become a part of the market and have great success. Like, buddy of mine, Danny Parkins, who does his dream job now in Chicago. He's terrific, terrific talent, really good guy. He had a great run in Kansas City. And he was in Kansas City when the Royals won the World Series and the Chiefs were pretty good. And I could tell, like, Danny was all in. He was dialed in on what was going on with those teams. And he was successful to that degree. There are plenty of folks, though, who come into different markets. And that's a challenge for them. So I would say Yankees, Mets, Knicks always play. And it would be nice, Brian, to actually have a football season with a relevant team. But, you know, neither here nor there.
Yeah, you can't have everything. Somebody explained New York radio to me like this one time. They say, of course, Yankee fans are interested in Yankee talk. But Met fans were also interested in Yankee talk, especially if the Yankees are doing poorly. Is that basically it?
I would say it's more the Met fan liking to poke fun at the Yankees when things are not going their way. If that's A-Rod, if that's the losing streak they just went on over the last couple of weeks. Because the Yankees have won, now they haven't won in 12, 13 years, but because 27 championships, the Mickey Mantle DiMaggio teams or the Jeter Mariano late 90s teams, like, there are Met fans who will never get over that, and the Yankees can't lose enough for them. And the dynamic in town is fun. It's I can never understand how anybody could say, oh, I like both teams. No. You're either a Yankee fan or a Met fan. There's no liking both teams. And I work at SNY. I'm fair with the Mets. When the Mets do well, I give them credit. I have no problem giving them credit. It's good for business. When the Mets are doing well, there's no other way around it. So I'm glad they're going to be in the playoffs this year. You think I'm rooting for them to win the World Series? Hell no. No, that would not make my life particularly pleasant.
Were Met fans and New York fans that hated you the most?
No, I don't think so. Because I actually think the Met fans sees me on SNY all the time, and they identify with you. Like, I kid you not, Brian, we're at Yankee Stadium for the Subway Series. We're at City Field a month ago for the Subway Series. Yankee Stadium, plenty of people came up, said hello, took a bunch of pictures. Great. I'm leaving City Field. I got mobbed. My esteemed producer, Stefan Anderson, will tell you this. We're going up the corridor to go from the field level seats up to the press box to go do our live show. I had Met fans like coming up to me in droves, for goodness sake. So I actually think my relationship with the Met fan is really good. Now, I've tweaked them from time to time, but I would say, you know who actually brings out a lot of animosity? The hockey fan, when you don't talk about their team enough. There's like a little bit of a Napoleonic complex with the hockey fan, where it's either you don't talk about the teams enough, or when you start to do the hockey talk, which we did during the playoffs, oh, now you're doing hockey. Oh, now all of a sudden you're a hockey expert. So like the hockey fan is a very, very interesting character.
So you mentioned the fans recognizing you at the field, coming up to you at the field. What are the other best perks of being a notable sports radio host in New York City?
Man, I never really thought about that.
Oh, come on. I've been to Peter Luger with you. You've absolutely thought about that.
No, I mean, it's just like, you're just a part of the fabric of town. You know what I mean? Like, it's nice knowing folk. I mean, listen, for anybody out there, when you feel like you're a part of a community and, like, people see you and they're like, hey, what's going on with the Mets? Or, hey, what's going on with the Yankees? That's cool. Like, I think that's a perk. Like, it could be weird at times. Like, I'm walking on the street and somebody's like, hey, what's going on with the Yanks? I'm like, do I know you? Oh, JJ, there we go. Like, it clicks that you're, you know, a media personality. I would just say more than anything, though, Bri, the people that I've gotten to meet, like, you get geeked out. And I don't as much anymore with athletes. Like, there are very few athletes. Like, if they come on the podcast or I meet them in person, I'm going to be geeked out. Like, Aaron Judge could be right in front of me. He's the man. He's the MVP of the American League. I'm not going to be starstruck. If I was in front of Don Mattingly right now, I'd be like, holy shit, that's Don Mattingly. Like, that's, like, the guy I idolized when I was a kid. So, like I'm doing TV today with Terry Collins. And Terry Collins is the man. He is such a gentleman. He's just telling stories. We, you know, that's the sort of perk I love. Like, a guy like that who has, you know, been in baseball for 40 or 50 years, you know, we're just in the newsroom shooting the shit. Like, we're at a bar and he's just telling you about this guy and this game and that game. So if there's something that kind of geeks me out, that kind of geeks me out.
What kind of radio did you like best? Being a solo act or being on with a co-host?
Depends on the co-host. I grew up doing shows at Syracuse mostly with a co-host. So, like, when I was doing radio, I did maybe 5 solo shows before I started at FAN. And the way it works, as you know, is when you're working late night or you're working in the evening, you're not working with anybody. You are the guy, you are the gal, you have to fill, you have to carry that time. When I could work with someone that could match me, right? Like, and I'm not saying that everybody can, because I'm a lunatic. I understand that. I'm a little high energy. Like, I'm not saying you got to match my energy, but if you could match it with wit or sports knowledge or, you know, be a good foe, it could work. Like, I love doing shows by myself. Like, that's what I grew up with. But some of the best and most fun radio I ever did, I worked with Evan Roberts for a couple weeks. Awesome. Like, the Yankee, the Met fan, the Jet, the Dolphin fan. Like, you have that internal conflict. Or I did, when you did shows with Mike, it was always, you knew Mike was here and you were there and you had to kind of just, like, get a word in. But, like, for me, when he had me in studio, I was deferential for sure. But if you just sit there silent, you're not going to say a damn word. So you kind of got to, like, interject and get in there. So I like doing both. It depended on my mood. It obviously depended on the co-host. But I had no problem doing either or.
You just needed a yin to your yang, somebody who was equal to you in some way or another. It would be a counterweight to you.
Yeah, I would say so. And not only that, Brian, when I look at a two-person show in any format, like, you got to feel like it's a show you believe in. You got to feel like it's a show that you think can absolutely work. I'm sorry. And if you don't have that mindset as a talent, then you need to question it. Because to say, oh, I got to trust my boss, or I got to trust, you know, man, like, you know, if a show is just doomed from the get-go, and at the end of the day, they may say, hey, make it work, try it, whatever. Well, if it fails, they're still going to be sitting in their cush job, are they not? You as the talent are going to be on the chopping block if it fails. So you got to be smart about those decisions. You really do.
You came to The Ringer last year and started podding full time. What's different about doing a podcast as opposed to radio?
So the idea that I can make my own hours around the games is, like, the most amazing, fantastic concept ever. Like, it's something you don't think about when you're working in radio, because it's pretty simple, Brian. You're on a schedule 5 days a week. You're either on after the Yankee games, you're on in the afternoon, you're on at 2 a.m. And no matter what's happening, that's your time to be on. For me to be able to craft out a schedule, hey, Subway Series is this week. Let's make sure we have stuff going on Monday and Tuesday. We'll take Wednesday off. It's a dead day. Nobody's playing. I don't have to fill an hour or 4 or 5 hours of content because there's not going to be as much demand for that particular type of content. So like that has been just so refreshing for me on so many different fronts. I was concerned about losing listener interaction. It was maybe the only concern I had, quite frankly, about coming to Ringer. I was like, well, how am I going to make that work? I'm good with people. I'm good with the fans. And between voicemails that we take on the pod, and then I use Spotify Live. I know some pods, it doesn't work as well. For me, it works great because we can post them. I go on live. I interact with calls basically like it's the old days at FAN, except they use a lot more foul language and they say whatever they want and I take whoever I want. But that has been so cool for me that like whenever I want to do that, I can say, hey, after Tuesday night Subway Series, I'm going to go live for 45 minutes. I'm going to take 15 to 20 calls. We'll maybe take the 10 best. We'll post it as a pod and away you go. And I don't think it loses anything. You may have a couple hundred people in there, but your listeners who maybe were at the game or they're sleeping or whatever, you have something that has staying power, but you still are able to like scratch that itch of being able to interact with people. Because like for me, I love doing interviews. We've had great guests on the podcast, but I never wanted to lose that. Because for me, that, in my opinion, is where I'm at my very best.
I was talking to Mad Dog Russo at the Super Bowl this year where you and I both were, and he said the same thing about the scheduling. He said the hard thing about radio is 4 o'clock, Wednesday, that's your shift, you got to be there, and you got to make it happen. And if you feel like crap, you got to make it happen. And if you feel great, you got to make it happen. If everything's happening, you're doing it. And if nothing's happening, you're doing it. And that's the biggest difference with podcasting. Which is it? Podcasting, there's at least a little more theoretical freedom that you can kind of play around with your, move to where the news is.
100%. I mean, I think about when I had to do 5 days a week in like mid-February, 5 hours, there's nothing going on. The basketball team stinks. The Yankees and the Mets are a week or two away from spring training. You're like, what am I? You would literally go into those shows saying, what am I going to do? And you make it work. Like you would think of creative things to bring up. Callers would help. You'd piggyback off ideas. But it's not the most fun time to be doing those type of shows. There's no doubt. Like I thought about February this year. I was like, February was a heck of a lot easier in podcast land than it was when I was in radio land saying, geez, I got to do 25 hours a week of content when it's done going on.
This is when we need the Knicks to be good. This is the whole point about good basketball in New York City. That would solve the February problem.
Oh, it would dramatically. Maybe Donovan Mitchell could help with that process in a couple of weeks. That'd be nice.
John Jastrzemski, a.k.a. JJ. Thanks for coming on the Press Box.
Thanks, Brian.
It's time for the second weekly edition of David Shoemaker Guesses, the Strained Pun Headline.
Yeah.
Monday's headline about episode 1 of House of the Dragon was bad air day.
Great pun. Does it diminish the pun at all if you could use the same pun for every article about the show? Like every episode's recap could probably be bad air day.
The beginning of Game of Thrones all the way to the spinoff.
Yes.
Was bad air day.
That's sort of the point.
Today's headline, David, comes from the Twitter account MLB Trade Rumors. It's about Elvis Andrus leaving the Oakland A's. Elvis Andrus left the Oakland A's and is now signed with the Chicago White Sox. But leaving the A's is what's important here. What was MLB Trade Rumors strained pun headline?
Is that Elvis has left the building? Elvis has left the...
Mm-hmm. You remember where the A's play?
Oakland, the Bay, the Bay
general,
area.
Generally correct, but the stadium they play in.
Where do they play?
Athletic, known as the Oakland
Athletics. The Oakland. I have no idea. Well, I don't know where the Oakland A's play.
The Elvis has left the Coliseum.
Oh. Yeah, okay.
Elvis has left the Coliseum.
For a specific name, but yeah, okay, that's great. Elvis has left the Coliseum.
Now known as the Ring Central Coliseum.
Love, a lot of good memories there at Ringsend.
And when I was looking this up today, we were already on like second generation Elvis headlines. SB Nation's headline is Elvis Andrews has entered the building.
Of course.
So we will never run out of variations. Shoemaker and I are back Monday with more lukewarm takes about the media. See you then, David.
See you later, Brian.